It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. Today on the show, Great Escapes.
Many years ago, our family home in the hills of California burnt to the ground. I lost everything in the world. After the fire, I bought a toothbrush from an all-night supermarket, and that was the only thing I had.
This is best-selling author Pico Iyer. Back in 1990, he was a young writer when this fire took all of his possessions, including all the ideas he'd been compiling for new projects.
I'd lost my next three books, which were in handwritten notes, so I was sort of back to zero.
For months, he camped out at a friend's house, sleeping on their floor, unsure what to do next.
And another friend, who was a school teacher, came in, saw me there, and said, "Come on, Pico, you can do better than this." And he told me how every spring he took his students up to this quiet retreat house 4 hours to the north. So I thought, well, if nothing else, I would have a bed to sleep in there, and a wide desk, and a private walled garden looking over the Pacific Ocean, all the food I could eat, all in those days for $30 a night. So compared with sleeping on a friend's floor, it looked like a very attractive proposition.
Pico got into his car and drove north for several hours, up the coast to Big Sur and this monastery, which sits high on a hilltop, surrounded by acres of forest on one side and looking out over the Pacific Ocean on the other.
And I do remember very vividly the minute I got out of my car in this monastery, the silence was pulsing. It wasn't just an absence of noise. It was a kind of active presence, maybe of everything I sleepwalk past in my regular life. And I walked into this small but comfortable room looking out on the Pacific, and instantly I felt I'd come home. This was the place I'd been looking for all my life, I felt. And so, in an odd way, I had been well prepared for the monastery by being stripped of everything, and even stripped of the way I define myself. If you think about losing everything in a forest fire, it sounds so terrifying. But in my case, for all the terrible losses, slowly all kinds of doors opened and made possible things that might never have happened otherwise. It was like being given a fresh start and a chance to make my life up again from scratch with this tabula rasa, and really to craft a life much closer to the life I'd always wanted to lead, a much simpler life, much less cluttered. And so in certain ways, the fire actually saved me from myself and gave me the opportunity to start again.
How do people find the courage to leave the world they know and make their way to a completely different reality? On today's show, ideas about escape and renewal. Stories about getting away from the modern world in search of peace of mind. Now, Pico Iyer is an acclaimed author who writes about his travels all over the world, from Japan to India, Iran to North Korea. And throughout the past 30 years, he has found himself returning to that same hermitage over and over again.
Yes, more than 100 times over 34 years, I've driven 4 hours up from my mother's house to a Catholic hermitage, which is a surprise even to me because I'm not a Christian. But I have found that's really become my secret home over these many years. And the monks leave everybody free because they're confident that just in undistracted silence, you will find what you need most. Whether you call it God or reality or your better self, you will find it.
In Pico's latest book, Aflame, he describes how his relationship with that undistracted silence has changed and morphed, how he's embraced it sometimes and wrestled with it at others.
Yes, so when I first went there, I thought, this is heaven. Who wouldn't want to be alone for $30 a night with a beautiful view of the Pacific Ocean and Big Sur and not a care in the world? And then soon after I began staying, suddenly a winter storm arrived and the rain pattered on my roof all night long and the aged heater groaned in the winter cold, and the very foundations of the little trailer in which I was sitting seemed to be shaking. And I looked out, and I couldn't see a single sign of human habitation. I was alone, it seemed, in 900 acres of remote wilderness, absolute mist, and it was terrifying. It felt like 40 days and nights in the wilderness. And then the next morning, of course, the sun rose and everything was beautiful again. But it was a very tonic reminder. Thomas Merton, the monk, says that if you seek out contemplation in search of anything, you're sure not to find it. There are no guarantees. And a monk knows much better than I do, as does a nun, that half the days are stormy and overcast, and however bright the daytime is, night will fall in time. And of course, when you're by yourself, all of us know, dark things come out of yourself. You have to confront your shadow side as well as your affirmation.
I noticed that in the beginning of the book, there's, of course, the extraordinary view of the Pacific Ocean that looms, and the way that every storm just seems to almost sort of take over your soul when you're in your little, I guess, little cottage, sheltering from the elements. And that when the sun does finally come out, it has a way of filling you up that just feels mystical. But as the book goes on, you quickly also get a lot of, I guess, comfort or creative solace from the rituals that are going on around you, from the monks and the way that they go about their day.
Yes. Initially, it was the nature that so moved and transported me. And in time, it became the people. So it is their rituals and the fact that they're maintaining a very rigorous and steady daily practice. They gather in the chapel five times a day, and they derive great freedom from knowing that at any hour of the day, they know exactly what they have to do and where they have to be. So to us on the outside, it looks like a very confining thing, but they find liberation from the fact that they're freed from doubt. And having traveled so much for 51 years around the globe, I've always felt that when I think of escape, it's not so important where you're escaping to, but what you're escaping from. And famously, if an angry person goes to Tibet, he starts complaining about the altitude. In other words, he's gone to a beautiful place, but he hasn't escaped himself. And so the special beauty of this place is that I do feel my lesser fretful self has been left behind. And suddenly I can access some much deeper, quieter place inside me, and also some much wider reality. I wake up to the world, I think. It's almost as if blinders come off, and suddenly I'm not locked inside my thoughts, but I'm wide awake to the light on the ocean and the rabbit on my splintered fence and the bells tolling behind me down the road.
There's a line I underlined where you say, "I'm glad to be away from the self I am when other people are around." And I think anyone living in our on-display world can really identify this idea of almost being sick of yourself. You know, here's what I'm doing. Here's why I'm winning. Here's why I'm so busy. And it's exhausting.
Exactly. I'm so happy you picked up on that line, because that's probably the central line in the entire book. So it's not just the noise in the world I'm trying to get away from, but it's the chatter in my head. An escape from my social self, an escape from my chit-chat, from my anxious thoughts, from my idle meditations, from my busy plans, an escape from all the static in my head. And the small miracle of being there, to this day, 34 years later, is whenever I step into that room, or even get out of my car, it feels as if little Pico and all his worries and ambitions and hopes are left down on the highway 2 miles below the hermitage. And I'm suddenly released to the world. It's as if I'm freed from my thoughts, which are usually the least interesting part of life, and liberated to this great radiant beauty all around me.
There are some people who might say what you're talking about is religion, that you can have this sacred space every week, depending on which religion you go to. There is a temple, a church for you. But we know that people are turning to religion less and less these days. I wonder how you see it on a daily basis, whether there is a way to find this comfort without having to leave your life, which many people can't do.
Exactly, because so many people don't have the time or resources to go on retreat, let alone to go on retreat regularly as I do. But as you say, the beauty of silence is that to some degree it's available to everyone, wherever you are, and to some degree at any time. And I tell my friends, take a long hike every Sunday, go and visit a friend without your cell phone, so that instantly you're in, I think, a much more intimate and undistracted place. Or maybe best of all, just sit quietly without your devices for 20 minutes every morning, setting a tone for the day. And that would represent probably only 3% of most people's waking hours, but it would completely transform the other 97%. And of course, I know many people have small children or a job that requires them to check in very, very early as soon as they wake up. But whoever you are, I think we can make space for those things in our daily life. And as you say, that's how we would encounter God or reality or some truth that otherwise eludes us far too much. I do feel that it's a universal medicine. Each of us may describe it differently and will find it in different ways, but it's something more and more essential as our world gets more and more fractured. And every now and then I'll hear myself say, I don't have time to go on retreat. And if I hear myself say that, that means that's the time I really need it, because it's akin to my saying, I don't have time to take my medicine.
That was author Pico Iyer. His latest book is A Flame, Learning from Silence. You can see his many TED Talks at TED.com. On the show today, escape and renewal. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. We'll be right back.